Hey, it's Millie, and welcome to the Generalist World podcast. This is a show where I interview people from the Generalist World community, and we talk things like the future of work, careers, predictions, their hot takes, and really understand what their squealy careers have looked like. So if you're a generalist who feels like they're living in a specialized world, this is the podcast for you.
Ellie, hello, and welcome to the Generalist World podcast.
Hello, thank you for having me.
I want to give kudos to Ellie because I actually DM'd you yesterday and I was like, hey, want to record a podcast tomorrow? And you were like, I'm in, let's do it. So snaps for grabbing life by the horns, as you describe it.
You can't pass an opportunity up to chat with Millie when it is presented to you.
Okay, I was trying to think of where I wanted to start this conversation, and I thought it could be cool to take us back to the moment that we actually met in person. Can you take me back to that day? And that was years ago now, wasn't it?
I was thinking about this today. I was trying to remember, was that post-pandemic? It must have been.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
God, the pandemic. I don't even know when that was anymore. Okay, so that was like 3 years ago, and you were taking a train across the United States, which none of Americans don't do. I don't know why you decided that that was a thing to do, nor did I even know where the train station was in Austin. So the fact that you got here by train was wild. But I had just gotten into Generalist World, and I hadn't even really put any thought behind the fact that you live in Scotland and were like, I'm going to be in Austin. And I was like, yeah, that must just be a thing she does all the time. This is so cool. But it was so nice because I had just figured out what a generalist was, and then I got to meet you and hear your story, your wild story of creating your own job descriptions and just like making that work. And it really, at a time in my life where I didn't know what I wanted to do and I didn't want to have to specialize, you were just standing in front of me like, you don't have to. You can have all those skills and just use them. It's a superpower. So that bar is sadly no longer there, but everything else from that day sticks with me.
Yes, and I'm so grateful. I certainly don't just do that every day. That was really a one-off catching that train. I don't know if I would do that again, if I'm honest. The 1 month, 4,000 kilometer trip across the US, it was a once in a lifetime kind of endeavor, I think. So, Ellie, folks are going to be spending the next 30 or so minutes with us. And I wonder if you could kind of tee it up, frame it for them about who you are, and not just like the what do you do question, but
yeah,
who is Ellie and why should folks be like, I'm gonna tune into this episode and I'm gonna listen in.
I'm a biz ops lover and now I'm an aspiring community builder. Thank you, Generalist World. But I think at my core, I love nonprofits. I especially love animal causes, and I worked at an animal rescue for 6 years, which is kind of where my generalist arc really started to grow. But I've been doing this stuff for 15 years, everything from consulting to animal welfare, where fixing processes can like literally save lives. And outside of work, I'm volunteering with Austin Farm Sanctuary and doing some ops stuff for them too. So I'm just really happy to be here. I love talking about systems and communities and figuring out how to make all that stuff more meaningful and easier.
Okay, so many ways, threads to pull on. The first thread I want to go down is, what do you define as a generalist arc?
So I didn't really know what a generalist was. I worked in sports publishing for almost 15 years, and we were a really small company, so our owner, when he needed something done, it was like, you're a project manager, but also can you do this and this and this? And it was kind of like, we just did, and I didn't realize that was weird or interesting. But every time someone asked me what I did, I didn't really know how to explain it. And then right before the pandemic, so like 2019, I got offered an opportunity to start working part-time at an animal shelter in town as a cat matchmaker. Who knew someone would pay me to play with cats? And I jumped at the opportunity because why not? And I was just really supposed to be matching cute cats with homes. That was it. And then the pandemic hit and sports ended. So we all essentially got furloughed or laid off. We didn't really know when what the pandemic was going to do, if sports was coming back, who the heck knows. So I had all this extra time to put into the animal shelter. And as generalists are like known to do, I was like, okay, we did this now, but like I could go fix this and I could build this. And like, what if we did it this way? That would make it so much easier. So it became 6 years of building programs and processes and protocols. And without really meaning to, I had landed in this op space as a generalist where I would say yes to anything. Anything they wanted me to do with that animal shelter, I was like, yep, I'm in. The more people and departments I could connect with, I was like hungry for it. Like, kind of like you did yesterday. Like, do you want to meet? They would be like, do you want to go on the news and talk about X? I'm like, sure. Let me go learn about X and then I'll go on the news and talk about X. Like, what? Do you want to go build this new program where we get these really hard to adopt animals like adopted and then can you teach the rest of the country? Yeah, I'm in. And like looking back on it now, that was totally generalist, being a generalist, like using all my different skills and interests and talking to different people and turning that into one big superpower. And it's like honestly when I felt the most alive.
Oof, I love that. And you have so hit on something that I've been thinking a lot about, specifically this week actually, which is like the overlap of work and meaning. Or work and purpose. And I think one of the signals to know that you're on the right track is when you feel alive doing the work that you're doing, when it gives you the electricity from your belly and you're like, that is such a signal to know that you're on the right path.
Yeah, 100% agree.
I love also that you're such an advocate for volunteering. As someone who lives on an island with less than 200 people, volunteering is kind of like a prerequisite to living there. Everyone I know is on at least one board. And I think volunteering is something that doesn't get spoken about enough. It's like seems like an afterthought perhaps for many folks. And so give us like the strong arm case for why volunteering is something people should consider.
I think that people forget that there are all these great organizations and you see the like work in person, right? You see the people going and volunteering at food banks. You see the people at animal shelters walking the dogs or cleaning kennels and all that stuff. But there's all this stuff behind the scenes that needs to get done. And what I've found is a lot of volunteer organizations don't even bother to ask if anybody wants to help with that stuff because they assume that people just want to do the glamorous part of volunteering, so to speak. And I've been involved with Austin Farm Sanctuary for 3 years now. The Austin part is kind of misleading because it's an hour away from me.
Okay.
So I go out there twice a month, but I asked their owner recently, I was like, do you have anything else I can do? Because I feel like there's this untapped world of like learning and giving back that we need to start leaning into. So Chris, who's the owner of Austin Farm Sanctuary, as soon as I was like, what's hands on keyboard that I can do? And he handed me this badass project where they had been caring for their animals and their records, just Google Sheets, Google Records, Basecamp, kind of stuff all over the place. And we put together an Airtable of all their 250 residents, their medical records, when they came, what their story was, all that stuff. I had never touched Airtable before he handed that to me, but we built this thing. I use it every day, and it's not something that I need to do to learn. I need to do to get good. And I would never have been able to learn that in a class because even this morning, he texted me this morning, hey, how many animals, is there a report we can run real quick? How many animals did we intake in 2025? I'm building out our impact report. And it was like, now there's data is at the tip of their fingertips. And it happens a little bit in animal rescue too. I think they're starting to lean in and be like, does anybody like the ops stuff? Does anybody want to organize? And I think the more you can go out there and offer your services, the more you can just add things to your tool belt for free while giving back and feeling good.
All of that. Fantastic, fantastic case. You mentioned that you learn by doing. When you think about your process of how that actually happens. Is there anything that stands out? Do you have a process for your learning, or is it simply following your curiosity, excitement? How does Ellie learn?
It's following the curiosity. I would love there to be a process. I feel like if we search the Generalist World community Slack every month, every week, someone's like, how are you all organizing what you want to learn? And all of us are like brain dumping at each other because we all have 65 different trains of thought that we want to follow, and there's only so many hours in the day. But I usually kind of grab on to something that I want to learn, like with a dog, with a bone. Currently for me, that is community building. I just am trying to devour as much information as I possibly can and really get involved in ways that are going to let me practice what I'm learning. So the community building thing kind of I fell into accidentally. As you know, we have World Generalist Day, and I wanted that to keep happening, but I'm an introvert. I did not want to have to run anything, lead anything, but it wasn't happening. So I was like, okay, I will co-run the Austin meetups, and then I connected with our Austin community lead, Sarah, and was like, hey, teach me how to run community stuff, because I don't know what I'm doing. So now it's like, read all the books, then run the event and put it all into practice. Sign up for cohorts. Wherever I can gain knowledge, anytime someone talks about community now, I'm like, oh, where did you come up with that idea? Where did you learn? How did it go? People are probably tired of hearing from me, but it's the only way to learn.
Do you think that you can, like, I'm trying to get at like the balance of learning and doing, because I think there's a danger in like today's world of knowledge where it's like, here is an unlimited fire hose of knowledge. And at some point you're going to have to pull the lever and just do. And I think you've actually framed that up really, really well, where it's not just about absorbing all of the knowledge. At some point you have to make the jump, you have to make the leap, and you have to do it. And I think the strategy you did, where you actually co-hosted this, was perfect. It's like a practice with someone else. And like, let's be honest, it's just like community that always makes it more fun.
Yeah. I feel like we really need to be building planes as we're flying them. Probably a lot of people would say that's not a great strategy, but to your point, at some point you just have to jump in and do it. And for me, doing something that I'm uncomfortable with, if I give myself the out to, oh, I haven't learned enough yet, I'm never going to go do the thing. I just need to jump in. My co-host in Austin, Jess, she's like, what's the worst that can happen? I guess the worst that can happen is there isn't enough seating.
Yeah, we can survive. And to your point about building the plane while it's flying, I saw this thread on LinkedIn the other day where someone was trying to crowdsource companies who were still doing what they started doing at the beginning. And it's like so few. Like, you just have to start doing the thing in order to understand the thing. Even Generalist World, yes, we're still a community and we still do content and we still run events, but the way in which the company has evolved, I couldn't have predicted it. You just have to start doing it, and the momentum will start to emerge.
I think that's a muscle that you really have to, maybe not a muscle that you have to flex, but something that it's difficult to get comfortable with. I remember when I was a volunteer at the animal shelter before I was staff, and I was on some committee, I don't know, we were like rebuilding volunteer protocols or something like that. And they were very much like, we just need to do and we'll fix as we go. And I was like, no, they must all be perfect. We can't onboard people into this system that isn't perfect. And it's like, we have to get the people interested. And then once they believe in the mission, or once they believe in what they're learning, once they believe in the cause, whatever it is you're trying to pull people into, they'll stay with you if you're building a good experience or you're providing value to them. But it took me a little while to get on board with that, because I'm such a type A perfectionist that I want it perfect before I ask people to commit to it.
Oh, yeah. Also a fine balance of timing. I think to add one point there, I think there is a point about honesty. And if you're just upfront and you're like, hey, I've done my best here, this is the best we've got for now, come in and help me make it even better. And I think like people are like, oh, cool, like, I'm in. She was honest about it. I'm not trying, I've never said that, like, Generalist World is the perfect finished polished product. I'm like, oh my gosh, it is like every single day we're 1% better, 1% better, 1% better. Mm-hmm. I want to touch for a little bit, because I'd be amiss not to, on ops, because this is like your bread and butter. And some folks who will be listening will be hardcore operators, and some will not be. Some will be like, ugh, ops, that's someone else's department. So I have kind of two questions, and feel free to answer however you like. One is, what advice do you have for non-ops people who want to get better at ops, who don't feel comfortable, who feel like that's someone else's job, but they can see the importance and they want to improve? Do you have any advice for them? And secondly, maybe it's related, how are you thinking about operations and, I'm going to say it, AI?
Oh boy. People who don't like ops but want to get better at it, I would say that it makes everything else so much better and so much easier when you lean in on it. Even if you're not someone who ever wants to have a career in ops, if you collaborate well with your operations team, the operations team is kind of like the servant leader of the organization. We are just trying to make everything everyone else does easy and seamless and painless. I'm always at my current job willing to take on the pain if that means that our billable resources can go out there and do what they're supposed to be doing. So I think developing relationships with your operation team and understanding that sometimes when they're asking for things, it's because they're trying to build something in the back end that's going to make your life easier. A lot of times I feel like there's a little bit of friction between like ops and other, if you will, because we sometimes are the annoying, nagging Nancys in the background, but it's all for good. I promise we are on your side. We are your champions behind the scenes. In terms of AI, I must admit I am a lagging AI adopter, because I feel like every day a new tool comes out and a new process comes out, and it's like you start getting good at one and six more pop up. So I'm kind of watching to see who's got the staying power, who's got the privacy, integrity stuff, and then deciding which place I want to put my eggs in the basket of. That's a terrible way to put it, but you know what I mean. Like, where do I want to lean in? My current company is so small right now that I don't really need AI to help me streamline anything. So I have, I'm kind of protected from having to lean all in hard, which I'm okay with right now.
Yeah, I think you've hit on two really key things, and that is staying power and privacy. There's been quite a lot of chat in GW this week around data and actually who's ultimately controlling this. And I've just seen that Claude Code and Claude, like, Cowork has come out, and Claude Code has been like all over everywhere. And I think we're in a, just a really, like, the liminal space between what we knew and what we trusted and how things always worked. This week, I very much felt like, I don't know if this is the beginning of the beginning or the beginning of the end, like, of the internet. And I know that sounds really dramatic, but when you plug Claude Code in and then you're like, do this, and then you step back and it does it, and I'm like, and this is the worst it'll ever be. Like, it's only gonna get smarter. I mean, I'm generally very optimistic about tech and about AI. However, I'm like, this will fundamentally change the way that we work.
I think it's interesting because when you say this is the worst it's ever going to be, when you look at, you know, your gateway drug to AI, like, well, ChatGPT, right, is everyone's gateway drug. I feel like we're going the opposite direction. I feel like the best it ever was is behind us.
Say more.
Especially in social media. Like, if you're scrolling through Instagram, it's like, you didn't even rewrite that caption. Like, and all the different genres of, what's a good example? Like, five healthcare companies that are smaller. Not ones that have, like, their giant own social media company, but, like, five little healthcare companies. ChatGPT has generated for them the five same captions. And no one is doing any quality control on it. And it's frustrating because now I see phrases that even if a human wrote those phrases, I immediately yeah. think AI, and I immediately give less credit to it. And that poor person who probably like really felt that, but I'm like, ugh, gosh. So it will be interesting where we go from here and how we thread the needle of it can do so many things, but I worry that people are not learning to use it in the right way from a creativity perspective, and that part of our brain is going to start to not be flexed.
And to that point, if you're listening to this, this is your sign to keep that muscle strong. Like, I cannot advocate for this enough. I know that it's more efficient, quote marks, to copy paste something that Claude or ChatGPT wrote, but it doesn't sound like you. And like, in some ways I feel like it's never been easier to just post something on the internet, but in others I think there's this enormous opportunity, this window of opportunity where it sounds so funny, but if you literally just don't use AI and you keep leaning into that creativity and you keep building that creative muscle, you're naturally going to stand out, because most people aren't doing that. So I think this is the era of where if you're really creative and you can lean into that, I think you're going to be okay.
Yeah, I would agree. It's like anything else. And it's funny how quickly you can lose it. So our next Generalist World Meetup is this Thursday, and I was putting together our activities and prompts and stuff, and I really wanted to have note cards. So instead of printing them out there, I was just handwriting them all. I probably wrote for like an hour, which is not impressive, but I was like, how did we do this when we were young and wrote like pages and pages of like, it's the same thing. Like, and I also think it's important to remember part of the creativity is just sitting there and staring at a blank page, and then something sparks, and like, then it all flows as if it's, you've released a dam. And people are so good and so interesting and so creative, and I want that to still be in the world.
Yeah, I think this is going to be like a high status signal in the world of work, where you can either bear boredom, where you're like, I can bear boredom. I'm good with boredom. I can sit at the screen and I can let those like bad ideas flow through until the really quality ones come out. Mm-hmm. I think it'll be high status to be able to be the creative person who's clearly not using ChatGPT. It'll be like, wow, imagine, like, they are doing it old school. And I think to your point about the handwritten, I think all of these things are going to become really, really important. For Christmas, like the Christmas that's just been, Emily and Edger wrote, I think they wrote, like, they literally created, they had like a crafty day, and they sent, I don't know, 50 cards to different members, these like handmade cards. And I'm just such an advocate for continuing to do the things that no one else is doing, because it's actually, it's like anti-efficiency is going to be the new like high status thing.
But you know, it maybe is anti-efficient from a, hey, I wanted to send 50 pieces of correspondence and I could have sent a mass email, but it is highly efficient in maintaining your connections, community, learning. I'm way more likely to reach out to someone who's invested the time in sending me a letter, a postcard, or reaching out directly for, hey, I saw this opportunity and thought of you. Hey, let's get together. I think that's how you build the real connections that is going to build where the workforce is going in the future.
Yes. And speaking of where the workforce is going in the future, do you have any predictions that you see coming over, say, the next 12 months?
I hope that we are going to lean more into building community. We're going to crack the code of building community versus how like icky networking can feel sometimes, because networking always feels like you're only doing it if you need something, versus building a group of people around you that spark your curiosity and you can learn things from. And I think generalists often say that they really like to be dot connectors, right? Mm-hmm. Like, I like to know where all the dots are in my organization so that I can pull them together, fill in gaps, anticipate issues before they happen. And I had this vision last night for unknown reasons of, if the dot connecting is the work, breadcrumbs are kind of the people. Mm. And in this case, you're laying these breadcrumbs out in front of you, leading you towards different opportunities, different experiences, different communities. Instead of leading yourself home, we're going forward into the future. And I think about it a lot because now that I'm trying to lean a little more into community building, I looked up the other day and I'm like, how did I end up in this connection cohort? Like, how did I find this? And it was because Jess led an International Generalist Day. I decided to do Austin. Sarah talked to me about leading it. Sarah posted on LinkedIn about cohort. And then I ended up in this group with like 30 people who all lead community. And I was like, wow, I never would have found myself in this space 2 months ago if I hadn't just followed the little breadcrumbs to see where it can lead.
Mm. What a beautiful analogy. That is so cool. And I actually think that's kind of like, that is community building. It really is. Whether that's online or in person, it is being this connector, being able to see where those breadcrumbs might connect. I think it's a really awesome analogy. How are you thinking about, I'm just curious, how are you thinking about the, like, talk us through a Generalist World Austin meetup. Someone from Austin might be listening to this. Ooh. Why should they come along?
Hey, Austinites! Generalist World Meetup. We are so young, but right now we're really trying to focus on getting to know each other and building some vulnerability so that in the coming months we can do things like practice pitches for each other or help solve problems. Maybe there's a problem that you're having at work and you can't figure out where to go from. There's so many interesting people in the group. The first one we had these name tags that had your name, but it said, ask me about. And when we were doing introductions, one of the gentlemen who joined was telling, he really likes cooking and he was telling us all these things. And then he dropped that he's a father and a DJ and a founder. And I was like, you needed 10 name tags.
Yeah.
How did you go with cooking when you're also a DJ and a father?
Wow.
So we're really excited. This week, we're doing a lot of connection, kind of breaking down some vulnerability walls. And then we're just going to start building projects. A lot of people want to volunteer together. I'm so excited. But so many good people.
It just boggles my mind. A moment for gratitude. Like, thank you so much for being the host and stepping up and being like, yeah, and making it something that it's not just this, like, we're going to go meet in a bar and we're going to say, what do you do? And then if there's no transaction to be had, I'm going to move on to the next person. Mm-hmm. That's not really community. That can be a networking event, but the transactional feel, and of course, transactions can be a part of community, but I don't think they should be the core or the heart. Yeah. And I adore what you just said, that the priority is really vulnerability and that's how you make friends. And if I really had to boil Generalist World down to like one sentence, it would be like, make generalist friends. Like, that's yes, that's really what we are hoping to do. Bring generalists together, make generalist friends, figure stuff out together. And I love that you're batting for the volunteering while you're there.
I am having a really good time. I have to shout out my co-host Jess because I am such a type A. I want everything to be perfect. Even today I was like, we have 11 people on the waiting list. She's like, let them all in. What's the worst that can happen? And I was like, she's like my moral support of making sure that I don't.
Amazing.
So if you're listening and I look nervous when you see me, it's because there are way more of you than I expected. And I'm excited and scared.
Oh, man, I'm so excited. I can't wait to see pictures. This has been amazing. Ellie, is there anything that I haven't asked you that you're like, I want to talk about this? Well, I've got the mic and everyone is listening. What did I not ask you?
I think you hit on everything. I really, really think that community building and volunteering is the way forward. There are so many tools to be learned from different people. And I know that a lot of people are job hunting at this time and the market is tough, but those volunteer orgs will accept you in a minute and you can start building your tool belt, meeting new people. Volunteer, volunteer, volunteer.
And you never know where it's going to lead, right? You just never know who you're going to meet. You never know the skill set you might stumble into could be the one that you do for the next 10 years. I think it's such an underspoken about strategy. So thank you for shining a light on it. We are going to link all of Ali's links so you can go and connect with her. And specifically, if you're in Austin, I hope you can go along to one of the future events. So Ali, thank you so much. I hope you have a wonderful day.
Thank you.